reveal another life below the level which mortals usually reach. In this crystalline moment of surprise, of suspense, one has a sudden revelation of the secret kingdom at the bottom of the sea. Here in the shallow flats, one finds, wading through warm ripples, great horse conchs pivoting on a leg, white sand dollars, marble medallions engraved in the mud, and myriads of bright-colored cochina clams glistening in the foam, their shells opening and shutting like butterflies' wings. So beautiful is the still hour of the sea's withdrawal, as beautiful as the sea's return when the encroaching waves pound up the beach, pressing to reach those dark, rumpled chains of seaweed which mark the last high tide. Perhaps this is the most important thing for me to take back from beach living. Simply the memory that each cycle of the tide is valid. Each cycle of the wave is valid. Each cycle of a relationship is valid. And my shells, I can sweep them all into my pocket. They are only there to remind me that the sea recedes and returns eternally. Let us be in silent reflection. I have a friend, an artist, who makes beautiful things of stained glass. Although she loves best the acts of creating her own art and of restoring the great wounded windows of synagogues and churches, her bread and butter comes from sales, among other things, of her Zen shell gardens. Each is a prism or a pyramid of beveled glass, and each of them holds treasures of the sea. At craft shows, she places a card beside these miniature seashells. It serves as invitation to browsers and reads, turn it, flip it, rearrange it, be bold. Nothing inside is too fragile. Turn it, flip it, rearrange it, be bold. Nothing inside is too fragile. As each potential buyer reaches warily toward one of these little pieces of art, she might say something like, go ahead, try it, do what you'd like, take a chance. You cannot destroy it. It will be okay. Holding this microcosmic seashore, we recall some of the words from Anne Morrow Lindbergh's contemplation. How can we learn to live through the ebb tides of our existence? How can we learn to take the trough of the wave? Lindbergh's answer was this: the most important thing to learn from the ebb and flow of the tide is simply that each flow of the tide is valid. She took home her seashells, she wrote, to remind herself that the sea recedes and returns eternally, as do the days of our lives. From Lindbergh, the sand and the shells, we may learn something of how to live our own lives and of our place and time. We learn that change is indeed continual. From one generation to the next, we cycle through the ebbs and the flows with ourselves and in relationships, in our families, and in our various communities. When caught in the ebb tides, we may be reminded of the wisdom of the Buddha, of the first noble truth, that life is suffering born of stress. This truth is grounded in the assumption that we suffer because we are not able to let go of our attachments to things or to circumstances, every one of which, by definition, is destined to change. We are faced on one hand by a wish for constancy, and on the other by the fact that all is impermanent. We come here today having confirmed every one of us through our life experience, I suspect, the great Buddha's truth. And each of us may be mourning or celebrating. Each of us may be feeling angry or apprehensive, relieved or tired, sad, weary, wary, fearful, or energized, joyful. Some among us may be dreading, and some may be blissfully anticipating the future. Some may just be waiting to see what will come, stoically standing firm. Wherever we are, the truth is that for each of us, each day offers the possibility of a new beginning. No matter what our respective personal stance, we come together in difficult times, each of us influenced as well by tremendous sea changes affecting this earth, politically, economically, geographically, meteorologically. And no matter how we may think about the changes, in some way, each of us mourns. We mourn as we let go of the sorrows, as well as the joys by which we have been touched. The Zen Shell Garden teaches us that no matter how much things may be shaken up, the shells and the sand, the fundamental elements contained within the prism, are intact. Even when turned upside down and viewed differently, so long as the shells are contained within this garden of glass, the elements remain constant, and there exists a myriad of future possibilities. There is still a unity in spite of the change. There are structures in place which may serve as constraints in a world that seems to be running amok, when all we want to do is cling to the familiar, or when all that has been familiar seems somehow unfamiliar, or when a community in which we have felt sure and secure may feel like it could lose its identity. As the Zen Shell Garden is shaken or rolled end to end, we are reminded that in the midst of change, it can seem like chaos will prevail. When we're confronted by the unknown, when people and processes in those places that once were most comforting and familiar seem less comfortable, when it seems that we may be pulled under by the riptides, it is hard to remember that we have survived incredible challenges in days gone by. No matter how shaken up we may feel, or how lost in the sand, in our families, or in our congregations, we share a history and hold a set of common values. Our families and these communities give us meaning and a sense of purpose, and each of us comes with hope for the future. Anne Lindbergh wrote that it was the ebb tides that reveal the secret kingdom at the bottom of the sea. And so it may be with us. Going into the depths, then, may we find in ourselves, in our families and beloved communities, aspects of those secret kingdoms, present all the time and available to us. Beams of light, brilliant creatures, hidden surprises that just may shift the way we think about what is yet to come. We can learn, for example, that we have amazing strengths that enable us to endure. And most of us here are fortunate enough to have the emotional, material, familial, or communal resources that help us get through the darkest of our nights. When things are shaken up, whether personally or perhaps in our congregations, some things that may have rested quietly below the surface will undoubtedly be revealed, and they deserve to be addressed. Buffeted mightily by crashing waves, we may not be conscious of unexpected and unintended changes in our personal attitudes and behaviors toward members of our families and in our closest communities, as well as toward the larger community. Through it all, we have the capacity to learn that we are survivors. When my son Justin went off to college several years ago, I was amazed at how well my husband Larry and I had adapted to our empty nest. This, however, was a short-lived illusion. In September, after Justin went away, I resumed a weekly commute to seminary from Albany to Boston. On the surface, it looked like I was doing what I've been doing for a few years. But that fall, I lacked my old enthusiasm. I no longer looked forward to classes or conversations with classmates. Instead, as each new week came around, I would drag myself to the bus station in Albany. At school, I would simply endure classes with the same professors who had inspired me just months before. I would do what I needed to do on campus, then hurry to meet the earliest possible bus so I could go home. One evening in late October, after a long conversation on the bus with a young man who spent a fair amount of our time together talking about how he was feeling to be taking his first trip away from home, I had settled as usual into my room at school. I read until I began to nod off, then turned out the light. As I lay in the dark, and with not a single warning thought, a tear formed and made its way down my cheek. And then another, and another. Lying there in the dark, I silently wept. Tearfully, I became aware of how desperately I was missing my son. My whole world, I suddenly came to realize, had been shaken, turned upside down and inside out. In the days that followed that tearful night, I began to make a curious connection. At some unconscious level, my desire to stay home had been my way of trying to keep things as I wanted them to be, familiar and comfortable, the way they had been. By some curious internal machination, I had intuited that if I stayed home, even though Justin was happily away at school, as my rational self wanted him to be, if I stayed at home, that much of my world as it had been, as I felt it should be, would remain. I began to grieve Justin's absence, but that wasn't all. Once I was able to name this sorrow, my old enthusiasm for school came back. But also, once the doors of my grief had been opened, I began to grieve events and relationships that I had never mourned. Some of those changes that I thought I had made so seamlessly had not been so seamless after all. Significant changes and the losses associated with them have a way of catching us up. We mourn, we may withdraw, get angry, become very busy. We work at keeping busy. We uncover new fears and reconnect with old ones. We may become impatient with strangers, and especially we may become impatient with those we feel closest to, those with whom we feel safest. We may feel impotent or out of control. And most often we do not make the very real connections between our feelings and our actions. We do not connect the busyness, the desire to be alone, the tears, the wanting to stay put, the quick flares of temper with our grief as we simply just get on with our lives. No matter how firmly we stand, no matter how effortlessly we think we can manage change and the associated sense of loss, change has its way of sneaking up on us, of fiddling with the rhythms of our everyday lives, of sabotaging our feelings and wreaking various levels of havoc in all of our relationships, including in our congregations. In our families and in our communities, when we go through significant personal times of change or communal times of change, like marriages, births, and deaths, like moving from one community to another, like losing a beloved lay leader, or we experience growth in a congregation, or a significant change in expectations or dynamics or leadership. No matter what the change or in what context, we need to recognize that before all else, we bring ourselves and our experiences to the fray. And particularly, we bring our personal experiences associated with grief and loss. No matter what the change, no matter what the context, no matter how deeply we may wish it or not, we need to find ways to reach acceptance. In our congregations, we are always affected by changing times, every single Sunday in some way. So we need ways to recognize and honor the call to be together, to hear and to address respectfully the differences among us, and to safely hold each other as we struggle to take each new step after step after step. In our congregations, in our families, in other voluntary associations, the covenants we make, the vows, the promises, the commitments to greater cause or higher purpose provide the vessels for holding each other, so long as we keep them alive and take the risky steps of reaching out in accordance with the promises we have made. Regardless of the differences among us, our covenants call us to remember how much we matter to each other and how much these congregations matter in which we are joined. May we all, in all of our congregations, find ways to hold each other as the Zen garden holds the shells and the sand. So, the summer after Justin graduated from college, 4 years after that, October 9th, he came home for 3 weeks before going off to a dream of a summer job. Signs of his presence permeated every room in the house. His stereo and video equipment took position on a seldom used formal dining room table. A stack of shoes grew by the kitchen door. Books, videos, and video games appeared in the most unlikely places. The refrigerator became home to a great variety of hot sauces. Piles grew in the laundry room. And the phone rang at hours of the day and night that Larry and I had not kept for years. In short, his presence contributed to a certain discontinuity in what had by then become the familiar rhythms of our days. The rite of passage that had been initiated by Justin's going off to college had brought a depth of sorrow that I had never known before. It led eventually to the discovery of different and welcome ways of being family. Although our household had indeed been shaken to the core, turned over, flipped, and rearranged, things have indeed turned out all right, at least for today. And I have to tell you, I love it when Justin visits. My friend, the stained glass artist, shared a portion of a letter she received from a woman who had bought a dozen Zen shell gardens. Following a difficult change in her life, this woman had bought them as gifts for close friends and family members, as a way of sharing her sense of optimism about the future of her hope. She had written to the recipient of each gift, "I was not in the mood to shop that day, but this Zen shell garden caught my eye. I touched it, and the artist said, 'Go ahead, shake it, turn it upside down and sideways, anything you want. you cannot destroy it. The writer went on, I hesitantly did as she instructed. Then it hit me, the zen of it. No matter how shaken up things can be, no matter how much my life has changed, I looked at the garden and realized things will be okay. I smiled, this woman wrote, and the artist looked at me, knowing I had received the message. Yes, she said, it's just a matter of perspective. As long as you can hold it, it will be all right. May it be so for each of you and for this lesson community. Amen. Well, I am aware that in many of your congregations, these are not the last words, and so I invite your responses. Do we take a microphone?
Yeah.
Questions, comments. That was a wonderful service. Thank you. Hey, I just want to say thank you so much for that. It's very timely for me because I've been contemplating a major life change and huge shakeup. I've been like anxious about whether it will work out, but it hit me this week that I'm really sad too about all I'll be leaving behind. So thank you for talking about the grief of change, and it just hit the right spot for me. Thank you.
It's important to feel this for me. It took a long time to learn.
I thought that what you said was very poetic and filled with wisdom. It sounds so simple to let go and to not be attached to things or whatever. In my life, I find it very, very difficult to let go. I have these ideas that, you know, what's mine is mine, and you shouldn't take it away from me unless I want you to. I have a lot of ideas along those lines, and it's extremely difficult for me to change this way of thinking. I mean, intellectually, I know that everything that you said is true, and I loved your example of the shell burn. It's fantastic, and I'll always remember that. But do you have any words for me of how to get rid of this idea that I have that I'm supposed to be treated a certain way, that I shouldn't have to let go of things that I don't want to let go of.
Does someone else have these things? I would just keep practicing, don't we? We would just keep coming back. One of the things I remember that was said to me at a time when I said, I feel like I have been here over and over and over again, and I'm so tired of it. And it's one of my mentors in chaplaincy training, and we talked to people. He said, you know, we can go around and around and feel like it's the same place, but we're really not in the same place. There's been this, you know, we've come from where we were that first time or third or 17th time. We felt that way. We've gained a lot of life experience. And I think sometimes it's harder to let go of the older we get. As we lose people, I see that with my mother.
Yeah, the song, the Brad Paisley song, just after your sermon started going through my head, the death of a single man. I don't know if anybody's heard it, but it was the lament. representation of single men losing one of their own to somebody getting married. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, you can listen to it on YouTube, The Death of a Single Man. It'll really mix in with this in a very sarcastic kind of way. I don't know.
I'm on my third husband, and my third time's a charm. On my first two marriages, I literally walked away empty-handed from everything, my household, my furniture, everything. So now on my third marriage, a little while ago, my husband and I were having some real problems, and we had talked about separating, and me, being the selfless person that I am, said, you know, if we do separate, I'll be the one to leave. So given that, I would sit in my comfortable recliner and look around at everything that I had accumulated and thought, I'm doing it again. I'm walking away from everything. So I literally lived in the suffering of, at the time, a bad marriage just to keep my belongings, just to keep my material things. Fortunately, my husband and I did work it out. And I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that I didn't want to part with my material things. But we're doing well now. But it was, I mean, perfect. Yeah, I loved it. Thank you so much.
I want to thank you. I think being on the internet, like I bought this device for $60, and it's giving me the internet 5 bars. I could do anything I want on my tablet, my computer, my phone, whatever I want to do. And I think that's what my life's like. It's like one big internet, just waiting and just giving me opportunities to start over with my life.
I'd just like to say that personally, your talk really touched me personally, but also, I really appreciated your references to our contribution, and you really hit the nail on the head, I think, in a lot of ways, because we've had a lot of transition between ministers, with presidents of our congregation, lots of transition, so I thank you for that. I think it was really insightful. Other comments? Okay, thank you very much. So let's sing the closing hymn. If you'll stand in body or in spirit. Closing hymn is "'Tis a Gift to Be Simple," number 16.
And now may we have faith in life to do wise planting, that the generations to come may reap even more abundantly than we. May we be bold in bringing to fruition the golden dreams of human kinship and justice. This we ask, that the fields of promise become fields of reality. These words from Emil Goodmanson can close our service. Thank you. And thanks for your hospitality.
Thank you, Lynn. If we could join in extinguishing the chalice with the words printed in the order of service. We extinguish this flame, but not love.